upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. Welcome to Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, editor-in-chief and founder of Technocracy News and Trends. Who could ever forget the famous lines of Captain James T. Kirk, "Sulu, lock phasers." Well, that's a good science fiction meme, but with modern technology, it's becoming a reality. We've been following the development of laser technology for military application for some time. But now a major story has been released that laser weapons will indeed be implemented on U.S. naval vessels that promises to change warfare forever. The article states, if swarms of enemy small attack boats armed with guns and explosives approached a Navy ship alongside missile-armed drones and helicopters closing into strike range, ship commanders would instantly begin weighing defensive options to include interceptor missiles, electronic warfare, deck-mounted guns, or area weapons such as close-in weapon systems. Now, attacks such as these will also be countered with laser weapons being added to the equation, bringing new dimensions to maritime warfare on the open sea. By 2021, U.S. naval destroyers will be armed with a new ship-fired laser able to sense and incinerate enemy drones, low-flying aircraft, and small boat attacks, all while firing at the speed of light. Lasers have existed for many years, of course, but the Navy is now adjusting emerging tactics, techniques, and procedures to how new high-powered ship-fired lasers will change ship defenses and attack options. Lockheed Martin, one of the primary contractors for these new weapons, and the U.S. Navy have been working on ground attack tests against mock enemy targets to prepare high-energy lasers for war. The weapon, called High-Energy Laser and Integrated Optical Dazzler with Surveillance, or HELIOS, H-E-L-I-O-S, is engineered to surveil, track, and destroy targets from an integrated ship system consisting of advanced radar, fire control technology, and targeting sensors. And yes, all that means basically artificial intelligence will be used to make instantaneous decisions on what will be shot down and how fast. Working with the Navy, Lockheed has recently completed its systems design review for HELIOS, a process which examines weapon requirements and prepares subsystems and designs. The intent is to engineer an integrated tactical laser system able to receive, quote, real-time operating feedback well in advance before the system hits the ship. One reason that the Navy was picked first, by the way, is the platform of a ship offers serious energy generation capacity. Energy is the big requirement for firing these laser weapons, and fortunately, ships apparently have the larger generation capacity needed. As systems are miniaturized or made smaller, they will undoubtedly be mounted in all kinds of situations, including on trucks and even aircraft. The second story today is a story of the resistance. The headline is Cities Take On Blocking Facial Recognition Tech. I've discussed this in recent issues that cities like San Francisco and Somerville in Massachusetts have blocked facial recognition technology from use in their cities. Others are coming on now, right behind them. Some states as well are cracking down on facial recognition software. I wrote at the top of this, however, that because there are no federal regulations to limit the spread of facial recognition technology, and that's absolutely true, by the way, Congress has been asleep at the switch on this. So there's no regulations right now preventing the spread of facial recognition technology on a local basis. However, local activists across the nation are demanding action from cities, counties, and even states to stop it. And yes, they have been successful in some cases, and other city councils are working through the process right now, being pushed by these local activists. This proves the point that I have been right for some time now, that local activism is the key to pushing back on the surveillance state. Not federal regulation, but local action. The article states, cities and states are leading the crackdown as lawmakers in Congress struggle to find a path to address concerns over emerging technology. Privacy and civil rights advocates have castigated facial recognition as overly invasive and potentially discriminatory. But with Washington appearing slow to act, critics are now targeting their efforts at the state and local level, where they believe legislation to restrict the technology can move faster and tougher action is likelier. Their campaign has been bolstered by a series of wins in recent weeks. San Francisco last month became the first city to ban local government agencies from using facial recognition technology, followed last week by Somerville, Massachusetts. Meanwhile, several states are weighing proposals that would limit or temporarily halt the government's use of sensitive tech. Quote, the value of cities and states as well is that they are the laboratories of democracy, said Jacob Snow, an attorney with the ACLU. It's been heartening to see that right now they're leading the charge to limit face surveillance. Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat from Oregon, said Congress is still in the early stages of educating itself on facial recognition. He's been raising concerns over technology for years, and he continued, and I fear by the time it does, the train will have left the station. Activists are hoping to ultimately direct the local grassroots passion toward Congress as they push for a temporary ban or at least more regulation. Facial recognition technology, which scans people's faces for the purpose of identifying them, has swept across the country in recent years without any government regulation or oversight. There is no federal law that provides safeguards on face scanning, a form of biometric surveillance. So the battle is on. I can only encourage you local activists out there around the country to get busy in your local community. Take the template found in these other cities to your city council and simply tell them that this must stop. Their responsibility is to protect the citizens and the civil rights of the citizens in their community. Well, the last story throws a little shade on the previous story. The headline is FBI and ICE turn DMV, that is Department of Motor Vehicles photos, into a surveillance behemoth. This is very disturbing. The article states, agents with the FBI and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, that's ICE, have turned states' driver's license databases into a facial recognition goldmine, scanning through hundreds of millions of Americans' photos without their knowledge or consent, newly released documents show. Thousands of facial recognition requests, internal documents, and emails over the past 5 years obtained through public records requests by Georgetown University researchers and provided to the Washington Post reveal that federal investigators have turned State Department of Motor Vehicles databases into the bedrock of an unprecedented surveillance infrastructure. Police have long had access to fingerprints, DNA, and other biometric data taken from criminal suspects, but the DMV records contain the photos of the majority of a state's residents, most of whom have never been charged with a crime. Neither Congress nor state legislators have authorized the development of such a system, and growing numbers of Democratic and Republican lawmakers are criticizing the technology as dangerous, pervasive, and error-prone surveillance tool. Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio, the Oversight Committee's ranking Republican, seemed particularly incensed during a hearing into the technology last month at the use of driver's license photos in federal facial recognition searches without approval of state legislatures or individual license holders. He said, they're just given access to that to the FBI. No individual signed off on that when they renewed their driver's license, got their driver's licenses. They didn't sign any waiver saying, oh, it's okay to turn my information, my photo, over to the FBI. No elected officials voted for that to happen. Despite these doubts, federal investigators have turned facial recognition into a routine investigative tool. Since 2011, the FBI has logged more than 390,000 facial recognition searches of federal and local databases, including state DMV databases, the Government Accountability Office said last month. And the records show that federal investigators have forged daily working relationships with DMV officials. In Utah, FBI and ICE agents logged more than 1,000 facial recognition searches between 2015 and 2017. Names and other details are hidden, though dozens of searches are marked as having returned a possible match. A little backstory on this is necessary. It was Department of Homeland Security originally that opened government access to hundreds of millions of driver's license photos with DMV. The DHS created a network of so-called fusion centers, that's fusion, F-U-S-I-O-N, between 2003 and 2007. These fusion centers exist in every state in the union. Some states have more than one. And the mission of the fusion center was to accumulate information locally, roll it up into a database, or provide tools to merge those databases together on a real-time basis, and then provide that information flow back to the federal government. In the data processing world, the term fusion has to do with making two different databases talk to each other in a meaningful way. The process of combining two databases is called fusion. This is not a mystical phrase or some kind of a weird name just to assign to an organization, but fusion centers were tasked with the specific mission of working with local officials to integrate all data that they could get their hands on into a searchable database, turning the results over to the federal government. Well, the fusion center concept was wildly successful. And we see this now as the FBI and ICE are accessing freely DMV databases around the country. There's no regulation, apparently, allowing them to do this, whether state or federal, but they just rushed in and took all the ground they could to get this done. Well, now they've been discovered. Question is now, what will states or the federal government do to rein in the FBI and ICE? So on one hand, we have local activists working to block facial recognition technology in cities and states and counties around the country. But while that's happening, the government has turned out to be the master surveillance entity of the world, and they're surveilling citizens at an unprecedented rate. Now, I'd like to give you a little bit more background on surveillance and a topic that's closely related to facial recognition, and that is so-called geospatial intelligence. This is a relatively new field of the intelligence world. The short name for geospatial intelligence is GEOINT, and I'm going to read to you a couple of pages from my book, Technocracy, The Hard Road to World Order, starting on page 130. The name of the chapter is Living in a Fishbowl. I wrote, "The drive to smart city transformation entails all of the above-mentioned technology into a relatively new discipline called geospatial intelligence, or GEOINT. And it is being used extensively in attempting to manage the hordes of people in urban environments. GEOINT was originally conceived as a discipline by the U.S. military for military purposes of, quote, mastering the human domain on the battlefield. The term was coined in 2011 by former Director of National Intelligence, Lieutenant General James Clapper. At the time, he was the head of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency in Springfield, Virginia. Here is the department's original and official definition, and I quote, GEOINT encompasses all aspects of imagery, including capabilities formerly referred to as advanced geospatial intelligence and imagery-derived MASINT, MASINT, and geospatial information and services, that's GINS, formerly referred to as mapping, charting, and geodesy. It includes, but is not limited to, data ranging from the ultraviolet through the microwave portions of the electromagnetic spectrum, as well as information derived from the analysis of literal imagery, geospatial data, georeference social media, and information technically derived from the processing, exploitation, literal and non-literal analysis of spectral, spatial, temporal, radiometric, phase history, polarimetric data, fused products, that is, products created out of two or more data sources, and the ancillary data needed for data processing and exploitation and signature information to include development, validation, simulation, data archival, and dissemination. These types of data can be collected on stationary and moving targets by electro-optical related sensor programs, both passive and active, and non-technical means to include geospatial information acquired by personnel in the field. Close quote. GeoInt is closely related to traditional concepts of geography, where all immovable features and objects in a landscape are mapped. Such field mapping allows us to reliably get from point A to point B on a consistent basis. Neither point A or B are expected to change locations. In a much broader context, GeoInt attempts to factor in all movable objects, including cars, trucks, and airplanes, but most importantly, humans. Humans are never in the same place for very long, especially in modern society. GeoInt literally maps the entire human domain and overlays it onto a traditional mapping system. By tracking the location of all people in the targeted system, they quickly subdivide into naturally associated groups and networks. These could represent any group, such as friend or family networks, social groups, religious affiliations, political meetings, etc. When you observe people long enough with enough detail, not only do their personal patterns emerge, but also their relationship to the groups to which they belong are soon observed to follow their own patterns. What GeoInt attempts to do is locate the behavioral anomalies that would warrant closer analysis. The problem is that it demands knowledge of all normal behavior patterns and thus total surveillance of all people. On the battlefield, for instance, imagine our military carefully watching a suspected enemy cell that might launch an attack. As long as normal patterns are observed, there is no alarm. But when a few of the members stray outside those patterns, it would indicate something unusual is happening. If those outliers were seen amassing ammunition, for instance, it would set off alarm bells. Another key element of GeoInt is satellite and drone imagery. While these may not identify each individual, they can still note broader changes taking place in the overall landscape. Coupled with on-the-ground intelligence, imagery can take on significant meaning. Thanks to data-hungry technocrat social engineers, civilian populations all over the world are now coming under the microscope of geospatial tracking and analysis, or, of course, GeoInt. The smart city initiatives in America would be instantly regurgitated by citizens if citizens understood that mastering the human domain has them playing the part of the human domain to be mastered. Notably, the field of GeoInt has grown so fast that 17 universities now have degree or certificate programs available, including Penn State, University of North Carolina, University of Maryland, Utah, Southern California, Johns Hopkins, George Mason University, University of Texas and Missouri. Many of these programs are a subsidiary of geography departments, but with a crossover to information technologies. One prominent GeoInt pioneer is Dr. Jerome E. Dobson, Emeritus Professor of Geography at the University of Kansas, former Distinguished Research Fellow at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, and President of the American Geographical Society. Since the field of GeoInt was identified in 2011, Dobson has been considered a pioneer. However, even before GeoInt was a defined discipline, Dobson wrestled with the ethical issue of his own field of geographic information systems. In 2003, 8 years before General Clapper's declaration of GeoInt, Dobson wrote a paper with colleague Peter Fisher titled "Geoslavery." And they wrote, this is a quote, "Human tracking devices, however, introduce a new potential for real-time control that extends far beyond privacy and surveillance per se. As a result, society must contemplate a new form of slavery characterized by location control. Geoslavery now looms as a real, immediate, and global threat." Close quote. Society has failed to contemplate geoslavery, even though it has had ample opportunity and reason to do so, concluding that geoslavery is the, quote, "ultimate fulfillment of George Orwell's Big Brother nightmare," close quote. They note that instead of watching 20 or 30 people at a time, location-based services can monitor thousands or even millions simultaneously. Today, as in China, we could raise the count into the billions. In the smart city of tomorrow, people will indeed be living in a fishbowl, tracked, monitored, analyzed, nudged, limited, and directed. They will be told what to think, how to think, when to think, and how they're allowed to speak. Nonconformists will be conformed or shunned. Troublemakers will simply be excluded altogether. We see this happening in China, by the way, today with their social credit scoring system. Surveillance technology is an outgrowth of the discipline of geointelligence, or geoint. We need to recognize that facial recognition can be stopped on a local basis, but it does not stop the government from doing what it is doing to accumulate data at a massive scale on all citizens of our country. This also will ultimately require federal legislation, if that would ever come, to rein in intelligence agencies like the FBI, CIA, Department of Homeland Security, National Security Administration, and so on. This is a big task. It also is a direct confrontation of the so-called deep state, of which the intelligence community is considered a part. So the battle may well be on. But at least it's being engaged now on a local basis, and this is a very good thing. The resistance is rising. We need to see that and recognize it for what it is, and we need to encourage everybody, everywhere, to get involved in the local communities, to start pushing back on this and getting other people involved that understand what's going on. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll catch you next time.